Understanding is what it's all about here on Tell Me Your Story. Thanks for joining us. Hope you'll understand that we're going to jump right into our program today because a lot of the preliminary stuff you already know. You know where we are at richarddugan.com. You know that we're on SoundCloud and a bunch of other places, very notable like Spotify and iTunes and many others. You also know that you want to listen to the podcast because we go many times beyond the 50-minute limit of the radio broadcast. And you also know that if you'd like to support us because you like what we're doing, it resonates with you, and you'd like to help us out financially, that we have a PayPal and Patreon account, and you know where to find those on the homepage and the missions page. So with all of that said, we're going to give you our guest website in a few moments, but we're going to introduce a returning guest to our program. One of the reasons I love having you on the program, Maureen St. Germain, is because of your last name, St. Germain. I don't know why. There's something resonates in the back of my head somewhere with St. Germain. Thanks for joining us again.
It's my pleasure. I so love being on your show, and I love the questions you ask, and I love your audience. So, yeah, let's rock and roll.
Absolutely. You're also the author of Waking Up in 5D. We can talk about that as well. As I mentioned, Opening the Akashic Records is also one of your books. Meet your record keepers and to discover your soul's purpose. And I would venture that the record keepers of the Akashic Records, mine and others, though they might be considered a bureaucracy, they're extremely efficient, and they're not going to tell you to wait 10 weeks to 2 months for the information.
That's cool.
That's not going to happen.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Not going to happen.
Not going to happen. Cool. I want to jump into an area that I think a lot of folks are curious about, and they're really trying to understand this aspect of existence, if you will. I was sharing with you as we just got started, I was sharing with you about the fact that many years ago, I acquired a video of what is referred to as the Merkaba. Now, some people may know what that is, and I'm going to have you define that for us in a moment, but it was a fascinating video, and it was more of a meditative type of presentation. It wasn't information as far as describing it, telling us what it was used for, et cetera, or where it came from, which we will get into. But first of all, tell us, what is the Merkaba?
It's a spaceship you build by yourself for yourself.
Really?
Yeah.
I never thought of it that way. I mean, I remember the images and the geometric forms.
Uh-huh.
Is this in any relationship to sacred geometry? Is there any connection whatsoever?
Complete connection. It's actually built with a sacred geometry form, and everybody has the five platonic solids around their body, but what we do is turn them on.
The five what?
Platonic solids. You know, so think of a cube.
Okay.
That's considered one of the platonic solids. And the definition of a platonic solid is they have the same size face. They have the same angle. And if you spin them, they would inscribe a sphere. So an octahedron would fill that. And no, I have it. An octahedron would fill it. A icosahedron or dodecahedron. People might not know those names, but they would know an octahedron because most people are familiar with, you know, a pyramid that's connected to another pyramid at the base.
Right. I've heard of tetrahedrons also.
Yes, and that a double tetrahedron facing each other, inscribed inside each other, rather, you know, like nested halfway,
mm-hmm.
is the three-dimensional six-pointed star.
Oh, wow. So you say this is a, and I'll use your words, a spaceship that you build yourself for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It's a one-person craft, if you will. But it isn't. Is it a, it's not a literal spaceship.
Well, it dimensionally shifts your energy so that you can operate at a fifth dimensional way.
Okay. So the word space we're not referring to the cosmos, the universe, Pluto and Saturn and Alpha Centauri. We're talking about something much higher.
We're talking about something different.
Ah.
In other words, when David Deutsch, the eminent physicist, talks about multiple versions of a reality, each of those versions are in another dimension or another space-time. So a dimension is like a vibrational data set. And the way to help people understand would be to say, you know, you go to a concert and some music is very uplifting and your mindset, your vibration is uplifted to a higher vibration. Okay. So people have had these experiences where they're uplifted. They just never labeled it that way.
Are dimensions different from alternate timelines? And I would use the analogy of a TV program that has alternate endings.
Yes, they are.
They're different.
So different timelines are, you know, kind of what David Deutsch is talking about. Or, you know, the same choice, you go the road less traveled and the road not less traveled.
Mm-hmm.
But dimensions are vibrational data sets that are you and I moving our consciousness to a higher and higher states. So, for example, in meditation, people have what they call out-of-body experiences, or they have people have dreams that they know they are experiencing, even though their body isn't tagging along. And so as our vibrations data changes, our capacity to tune to something like a radio dial, the higher, like a dog doesn't hear, a dog hears things that you and I don't hear,
right,
for example.
Mm-hmm.
So that higher vibration, and I don't necessarily mean better, but simply higher, allows us to access a way of being that we haven't typically accessed. And because of that, when we do that meditation, the Merkaba meditation, we actually are tuning to the highest vibration that we can hold in our physical body. And when we do that, then we make it easy for ourselves to be what I call fifth dimensional.
Mm. Now, as I have said many times on this program, the universe asks the questions. I'm just along for the ride. So when when my mind gets these questions, I'm trying to parse them out. But at the same time, it's like, that's interesting. I wonder what you'll say to that. What about? okay, so we have the Merkaba. What is the relationship between the Merkaba and the Kabbalah or Tree of Life?
Aha, very good question. The Merkaba originally was referenced in the Zohar, and it is the four wheels spinning without turning. And it referred to in the Jewish sacred texts, or what Christians call the Old Testament, that it referred to the vehicle or the chariot that appeared to Ezekiel, and
yeah,
it's in Ezekiel 1:10. So the actual throne on its chalice goes back to that first chapter of Ezekiel, and the throne of glory is a source of long and long and visionary traditions. And some versions delete the word Merkaba, but they still refer to the vehicle,
the chariot of fire.
Right.
Yeah.
And according to later traditions found in the Zohar, written by the Kabbalist Moses de Leon, the vision of Ezekiel was a flying vehicle. Personally, I have always interpreted the Merkaba as a flying vehicle that you build by yourself for yourself.
Okay, now the next big question is, why would I do that? What's the purpose, and is there an end game to it?
Well, the purpose is that you can change the reality from a hit and miss reality to a more proactively pleasing reality. And that means that when you're ready to buy a present for your beloved, you're looking at three things and you intuitively know which one will please him or her. when you are making a decision about a choice, maybe which way to go home, you can tune to the one that's going to get you home with grace and ease. So part of what happens is you're able to make better decisions. And, you know, there's a lot of good decisions you can make. You know, you can go into a restaurant and maybe all the food is good. And you might make one decision about one meal or another meal, but the one that's going to give you the best meal for you that day is a very specific answer. So when you're quote, wearing your Merkaba, what happens is you attract higher vibrational energy coming into you, which means your interactions with people are very high and evolved and loving. And it also means that you're able to experience the reality from that vantage point. It's kind of like a child who has a temper tantrum is having a temper tantrum because they want something that they cannot have. The adult, on the other hand, recognizes that maybe the timing isn't right, or that the food they were going to eat in the refrigerator is bad and it's not healthy to eat it, even though they had their heart set on having it. So these energies allow you to move your awareness to a more expanded place, which allows you to have the ability to choose in a way that I would call wiser or better for you. So it improves your life dramatically. It makes everything shiny. It makes opportunities work. You know, I'll give you an example. One time I was in Hawaii with my mother, and she was taking me to a really nice place that she wanted to do as something special for my birthday. And she said, I got the rooms on the garden side instead of the ocean side, because the ocean side was so much more expensive. And I figure, you know, we're here in Hawaii and this is just a special treat. We're not going to need to be seeing the ocean because we see it all the time. And I said, fine. Well, the guy next to us was smoking and refused to quit smoking. And so the hotel said, would you be willing to move? And I said, okay. And they moved us to their corporate area, which had a private lounge and all the food you could imagine and an incredible view of the helicopter landing pad. We saw a helicopter go up in front of us on our lanai. We had a fabulous experience, and that never would have happened if we were just doing the ordinary everyday life. Things open up for you that they wouldn't open up otherwise.
So how is that different from my following the impulses of, if you will, of my still small voice, my intuition?
Well, the still small voice is a good resource, but it's like the difference between an Acura and a Mercedes. They're both going to get you where you want to go, but wouldn't you like to be in a nicer ride? Wouldn't you like to have a few more bells and whistles that make life fun and easier?
I would have to say that I would choose yes. And it's interesting that you bring that up, because, you know, you said that this is that it will help you to get to your the one example was that you would help it would help to get you to to I'm not going to get to my destination if I'm not careful here to your destination. But you didn't say safe and sound. You said with grace and ease. Mm-hmm. Now, I will share this very quickly. My listeners have probably heard this hundreds of times. I was bicycling to work one day, and it was 5 miles from the trailer I was living in to the transmitter site, and I had to go past, and there were roads there, through farm fields. And I get this prompting, up at the next corner, the next intersection, you are to make a right, go up to the next intersection, make a left, then go to the next intersection, make another left, and then when you get back down to this road, you're going to make a right to continue on, i.e. that 1 mile stretch that I would be bypassing that would have taken me directly to. So I was literally going 3 miles out of my way.
Okay.
And I went a half a mile down the road, not making that first right turn, and the prompting was so strong, I kid you not, I turned around. I went back to that intersection and I followed that 3 mile path and then got back on the road and got to the station. I have no idea why that prompting was given, whether or not I avoided an accident or whether the universe was testing me, because I had said in one program I'd been through that I would listen to and follow the promptings of my still small voice. All I know is that I find myself not even questioning it anymore. I get it and I go. And that's why I was asking you about this aspect of building this, and again using your term, spaceship, the Merkaba for us. What are the tools needed to build this spaceship?
A person spends maybe 20 hours learning the geometry and understanding the concepts. And then if they forget about it, it's okay because it's in their consciousness. And then they do a 5-minute meditation every day until it becomes permanent.
So this isn't something that you could accidentally create for yourself.
Oh, yes, you could. And there are people who do.
Oh, wow.
And this is something that is quite unusual because a lot of people that I work with or who taught the Merkaba like I did for years and years would deny that that's possible, that a person could do it on their own. And I was just about to comment on your decision to follow the still small voice. I have a feeling that you have done more to connect yourself with your higher self than perhaps you realize, because the very commitment to always follow it is huge. And when you do that, you no longer have to trust it because you know it's always right.
And I joke with people, and I've done this on the program many times, and I say it gently, I say it kindly, that if you're going to listen to the still small voice and not follow it, why are you bothering listening?
I say to people in alignment with that is that I have a protocol that will take a person through a process. And it's 3 steps that you follow for 6 weeks, which gives you the history that you need to know that your higher self is always right. Because how do people make decisions? They make decisions by looking at history. They make decisions by looking at data sets. Either, let's say you're going to buy a car. You're looking at Consumer Reports. You're talking to people who have a car like that. You're driving a test car. And then you're making a decision. But what if you have 6 weeks of practice where you're playing around asking unimportant questions and you have signals for yes and no and neutral so that you have a starting point, mm-hmm. and you play around and you ask, is it my highest best good to go to this restaurant? And until you get a yes, you don't go. So you finally get that yes, you go to that restaurant and you run into somebody that you've been trying to reach for a couple of weeks. Or you discover that the route you were given to go home, the one you usually take, had a big car tie-up. Or you discover that the guidance you received to take action now, to buy that thing now, was because the price went up. And so all kinds of fun, interesting opportunities arise from this practice period of 6 weeks. We get new DNA in 6 weeks. This is a scientific fact. And when you do this practice for 6 weeks, and like I said, there's 3 easy steps, what happens is you then have your own history. You not only have, you know, like history of other people saying that they follow their guidance, but you also have now your own history that shows you that your higher self is always right. And that leads you to another, I'll call it cycle of time, where you're starting to use it more and you're asking open-ended questions instead of just yes, no, because at the beginning when you're practicing, you're just doing Mary Had a Little Lamb business. You're not doing big stuff. And then you reach the point that you are already at. And that point is, I will always follow the guidance. Because once you make that commitment, you're like, you're on a tractor beam to your most evolved self, to your easiest and best life. And most of us who are kind of interested in this stuff are in a role of service anyway. So it helps us to be the most available and serving that we can be.
I had I want to share this with you to get your insights. Had an incident November 7th of 2018. I was involved in a non-injury accident. Now, I was traveling down this one-way, two-lane road, and there was a detour ahead, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, traffic's backed up. I'm going to turn down this side street, which I did, and I proceeded down the side street. About halfway down the block, a BMW pulled head first out into the street. I swerved to the left to try to avoid this gentleman, but we collided. And of course, he was very upset, saying I was going too fast. And a gentleman who had not actually seen the situation, but evaluated it based upon what he saw after the aftermath, said to the gentleman, "You pulled out into oncoming traffic. It doesn't matter how fast he was going. It is you are at fault." And of course, when the policeman arrived, he said the same thing. But what was so fascinating about this experience, my wife and I had been for, I'm going to say, the last 4 or 5 years talking about getting a truck to be able to hook up a travel trailer and obviously do some traveling. And when I shared this story with a friend of mine, they said, "You do realize there are other safer ways of of getting that truck than being involved in a auto accident." And I at first I thought about that. I said, "Well, yeah, you're probably right." But then again, I remembered, as I said, this was a non-injury. Neither of us were injured in any way. Maybe our pride a little bit, but other than that, and that his significant other, I don't know if it was his wife or his girlfriend, she was on the phone, of course, like to the insurance company. I made my phone calls. She was the epitome of calmness. I was just blown away. And I was off in the distance, maybe, I don't know, 20, 40 feet away from them as I'm making my calls. I get on the phone with my wife. She is the epitome of calmness, just letting her know what's going on. When the police officer arrived, I couldn't believe he just added to the calmness. And we went through the process and the police report, insurance. And that day we had to have a vehicle. So we went to the car rental and we ended up getting a 2018. It was a brand new 2018 Ford F-150, you know, all tricked out with the rear reverse camera and all that stuff, right? And we drove that for a month. And then we went to a dealership that was connected with our credit union, and they showed us a 2014 Ford F-150. Didn't have quite all the bells and whistles, but it was still pretty nice. We bought it. The Volvo was totaled because the price of the parts to repair it were too expensive. But here's when it was so interesting. The insurance company paid us enough that paid off the loan on the Volvo and gave us $2,000 to put down on the on the truck. And when we did sign the contract for the truck, there was one element that I had never heard of before. And that was that you could it was like insurance, where if this car was ever in an accident and totaled or what have you, that this insurance would pay off the loan. So it would be no different than what just happened with the Volvo. And we've been driving it now since December 4th, I think it is. Maybe it was first. Anyway, and so now we're in the truck. And I'm sitting here thinking, maybe this person who said there might be a, you know, you could have done that differently. I sit there going, I don't know. I don't think so. I think that my being led to go down that side street, was fortuitous. I don't know what happened to the gentleman, but he and I left on good terms. I didn't leave it to where we were at one another. Is that something that if we were to be in our higher self, listening to that still small voice, if you will, those promptings, that even when things of that nature happen, we really don't know what the future holds from that instant, but that if we stay out of our emotions, if you will, and in that higher state, that we can actually work through to a ease and grace of a, shall we say, solution or end result?
Well, I will offer a couple of things. Number one, I take issue with staying out of your emotions, because sometimes your emotions will help you. So I want to be clear about that. But yes, that's one way. And your friend was simply saying there's more than one way. I had a similar incident. I had slowed down enough so that when I got to the bottom of the hill, I could pull over. And there was a police car who had pulled someone over for, you know, they caught them in a speed trap. So the woman gets out of the car and makes sure I'm okay. Then she goes over to the policeman. It turns out it's somebody she knows. She tells him she saw the whole thing. He writes up a report that I can turn into my insurance company. And I did the same thing as you. The front end got fixed. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have to do a thing. So we orchestrate these opportunities. And maybe you could have orchestrated it a different way, but it doesn't really matter. You manifested it because you can.
Yeah. And it's what is interesting is that the elements that unfolded after that, for example, as we were going through the process, I knew that it was going to be a little bit more expensive to operate this vehicle, the insurance, gas, the monthly payments. But I also felt very comfortable knowing we can do this. And it didn't, because as we all know, finances are probably one of the biggest things we stress over.
Yes. And that's a really good point, because one of the I teach people, and this is in the first book I wrote called Be a Genie. I explained that when something happens that you aren't expecting, that's now going to cost money that you're not sure you have, saying, oh my gosh, now what? You say, how this bill is, the universe must know something I don't know, because I don't know that I have that resource. And you're validating your current situation, so there's no denial. You are claiming that the universe is, and you wait for the problem to fix itself. It's astounding. And the very fact that you said, I knew I could handle it, even though you didn't know how you were going to handle it or what specifically would happen to make it fun and easy to handle it.
Yeah, I agree. And the other aspect of it, too, that I find so interesting is the phrase that I heard many years ago, become a part of the process, don't try to control it. And that's really what I did.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
And that's big, because right now, you know, everybody's a control freak at some level, you know.
Yeah.
We all have our own little thing that we really want to do. You know, when my kids were little, I insisted that they put the ketchup in a certain spot so I could see when we were getting low, because I didn't have a lot of space or resources to be buying a lot of extra ketchup. So I didn't want to have to buy it unless I saw we were getting low. And that was like a staple at our house. Simple little thing, but it's a control drama. And we have control drama. So say that statement, get out of the way. Don't try to control it. Be a part of the process. Wow.
There it
That's
is.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And it's not easy sometimes. The first example of that that I really tried was back in 1993 when I bought my first house. We saw the house on September 1st and closed on the 30th of the September of that same year. And the one phrase that I kept uttering to myself over and over again, no matter what happened, was I reminded myself what
you're
I was doing.
Out just a little.
Yeah, I know. We're having some. I'm noticing that a little bit too. I'm hoping that we can get past that. I just kept telling myself, "You're buying a house. You're not doing anything else. You're not fighting with the loan officer. You're not dealing with the realtor, the appraiser, the title company, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, the insurance company. You're buying a house." So that's what I just really worked to remind myself of is you're buying a house. You're buying a house. Just, you know, anything came up, you're buying a house. So when we come back from the break, let's continue our conversation about the Merkaba and how we can begin that process. You talk about a 6-week course process, and I would like to talk more about that if we can. When we come back with our special guest, Maureen J. St. James, and if you would please give us the website so people can find out more.
Maureen St. Germain, M-A-U-R-N-S-T, GERMAIN.com.
That's MaureenSaintGermain.com. We hope that you will go there and check it out. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, and we'll be right back.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
And welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices. And the choices we're giving you today have to do with the Merkaba, which I found so fascinating when I came across the video that we talked about at the beginning of the program. I know that I have actually had the folks who were involved in that on this program. It's been several years. I will have to look that up and try to get that information, maybe have them on again. But one of the things I've noticed, too,
I can send you that DVD.
I would love to get a copy of that, and we'll exchange all that good information as well. But my own personal drawings history, if you will, is of abstract shapes, and I will create a frame of varying shapes and sizes, if you will, or of dimensions, what have you. So I draw a big old circle on a rectangular sheet of paper, and then I start crisscrossing it with lines. And crisscrossing it more and making maybe the spaces smaller and smaller. And then I take all of my colored pens or pencils or whatever I'm using, and I color in those spaces. And I only have one rule. Never put two similar colors next to each other so that you don't have two sectors, if you will, or parts, or puzzle pieces that are the same color. And I've got a whole bunch of those floating around. And when I saw the Merkaba, it kind of struck me as like, oh, isn't that interesting? It's not, you know, it's not quite the hedron, you know, the diamond shape or the triangular shape per se, but it has that look to it. And fractals are kind of the same thing. Any connection there between fractals and the Merkaba?
And no.
No, okay.
Fractals are, I said yes and no. So fractals are a form that was defined by Benoit Mandelbrot, who created software that would allow us to visually see what an irrational number would look like. So think about an irrational number like pi, 3.14... We know there's always another number. There's always something left over so that there's always another remainder. And what a fractal turns out is repeat this over and over in smaller forms, but with slight differences. And the Merkaba is a replicator of the energy of fifth dimension, and it overlays where we are. And we use the quality of a fractal, that ability to replicate, to activate it. So we're actually using an irrational number to turn it on.
Interesting.
Was that too high out there?
No. What I normally do is I have people listen to the interview several times. Then I have them go to your website, get in contact with you. And if they need a further explanation that we haven't elucidated here, then they can get that from you directly. And I encourage people to do that, folks. You need to go to MaureenSaintGermain.com and find out more about the Merkaba as well. The other element, or the other, I'm going to call it design, if you will, or symbol, the tree of life, or the Kabbalah. I actually created for my first wife, who was totally blind, a tactile version of it, which I still have. And one of the interesting parts about it is if you look at it straight on, of course, you look at it for long enough, then go over to a picture of, an image of, and maybe even the blueprints, for the Starship Enterprise, the original series in the 60s. I don't know if Roddenberry knew what he was drawing. Maybe he did. But I swear I see the Tree of Life, a portion of it, with the nacelles, those circles, and then the...
Well, I'm only hearing part of this, but I guarantee you that Roddenberry had resources that were otherworldly.
Yeah. I found that fascinating. And we're going to continue talking with Maureen Saint Germain here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. The library will be open in just a moment.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best
understand. And welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. I have to share with our listeners, I think it's only fair that we share with them that at the beginning of this program, I could have uttered the phrase often heard on sound stages and in recording studios all over the world. Take two. Because we had started an interview, and as we got into the subject matter, we were rolling along beautifully.
We were.
We were getting all kinds of interference. I think we were on Skype then. Mm-hmm. And you and I, we kept cutting out. Now, we had never had that problem before. You haven't changed your internet service provider, and neither had I. And, I mean, nothing really had changed since the last time we talked. And the only conclusion that you came to was that we're getting some interference from other sources. And we're not talking, folks. At least I don't think we're talking about interference from, quote unquote, the powers that be here on planet Earth, our government, secret societies, CIA, NSA, FBI, and so forth, or the KGB, or who knows what Ukraine has. We were talking about, I can't resist, we were talking about other worldly interference, if you will, maybe from other dimensions, the spirit world, etc., who were basically telling us what, Maureen? What was your observation?
Well, I don't remember what my observation then was, but I think we were on what I will call sacred ground, and it wasn't time to have the reveal of whatever it was we were headed towards.
Well, we're going to stay away from that, I think, today. Just not so much to avoid that interference, because who knows, maybe today's the day it's revealed, and the interview will flow into that automatically. I mean, it's just, again, I ask the universe asks the questions. I'm just along for the ride. So I'm kind of hoping we go there. But if we don't, we still have a ton more to talk about. Your claim to fame, so to speak, is, of course, Akashic Records. We've talked about a lot of that, a lot. We have talked about that a lot over the last couple of years that we've been communicating and sharing with our listeners. So let's kind of start there, and then let's dive into some other areas as well that you have available on your website, which, by the way, folks, is MaureenSaintGermain.com. And we are always linked to our guests. But let's start out by telling folks, what are the Akashic Records, and why are they important to us as individuals as well as collectively as a community?
Okay, so first of all, I want to add to my claim to fame, and that is Waking Up in 5D, which is another book I wrote before I wrote the Akashic Records book. Actually, I wrote the Akashic Records book first, but the Waking Up in 5D got published first here in the States. And the Akashic Records are the body of knowledge that coexists in reality in a finer dimension, a finely tuned dimension, that we don't normally have access to unless we tune to it. Just like you don't have access to a certain radio station or a certain internet station unless you set your dial to that. Mm-hmm. And it is a data set that contains all of our history, all of our present, and our potential. So our potential futures that we've thought about are also in there, because we've thought about them.
Well, I know that we've gone into detail in regards to what that's all about in the past. I don't want to rehash that, at least at this particular point. But the area I do want to jump into is that whole aspect of 5D, or the fifth dimension, if you will. Now, that has absolutely nothing to do with our local cell phone service providers jumping from 4G to 5G.
This is true, and I'm so glad you mentioned that. Yeah, that's a pretty big concern of everyone's, by the way.
Well, that's what I've been hearing, that it's that it's not good, not healthy for us because of the various issues that are brought up, but also in terms of, I mean, I sit here And I marvel at least at the fact that the computer industry is no longer pumping us, telling us that they have an even faster computer than they did yesterday and the day before that and so forth. I'm not seeing those commercials anymore. Now what I'm seeing is, of course, the internet, which is where we seem to do most of our work now. I mean, we can do it on our phones. And if we had the technologies at our hands, we could also launch rockets to the moon with our phones. That's how sophisticated they are. So tell us from your perspective, we'll kind of go over, we'll just touch upon this a little bit. What do you know about this issue of 5G?
Oh, I you know, I'm not very well versed other than what you just said.
Oh, okay.
And well, the vibration is deleterious, very harmful to humans.
Well,
so it's you know, not a good thing.
All right. Well, let's change the letter to D for dimension. Talk to us about the 5D, the fifth dimension. What is it?
Okay. So the fifth dimension is the vibrational place that we are going to, that we are co-creating, and it is the equivalent of what everyone else tells us is heaven. So, in fact, all of humanity is becoming fifth dimensional. Just like now we're third dimensional, 5D or fifth dimension is this zone of interacting with each other that is dramatically different than 3D. And the reason it's dramatically different is for a couple of reasons. Number one, there's no polarity. So it means there's no energy on... I'll call it bad choices, because there are no bad choices. And it doesn't mean that all choices are good. It means that the possibility of coming up with a bad choice doesn't exist. So it's like we've erased half of creation by having only the choices that take us to a place of closer to our divine self. So, you know, when it's time to do something, let's say it's time to serve someone a meal, you're not thinking about how you can cause them harm. Not that you would harm a guest, but I mean, if you had an agenda, let's say, you could choose to serve them something that would make them sick. You could also choose to serve them something that would make them feel good. And in 5D, in fifth dimension, you're not even going to consider, it doesn't even occur to you to come up with something that would be harmful. And it's a bit like when you treat the relatives you love to a dinner, you wouldn't dream of doing something you know would harm them or would cause them discomfort or make them unhappy. So the fifth dimension is a zone of unconditional love, and the love is so big that it's not even possible. It's unthinkable to have a thought that's harmful.
Yeah.
And that's the difference. In 3D, and I'd like to give an analogy because I think that's very helpful. In 3D, we have choice to choose the not God choice or the God choice. And I deliberately use those cumbersome words because I don't want to use good or bad, because good or bad has so much pejorative, so much judgment. But when you say the God choice or the not God choice, it helps people understand that God gave us that choice. He gave us choice. What nobody anticipated, including the divine, was man's inhumanity to man. But let me give you an example that makes it so much drives down that point. If we're watching a three-year-old, it's our job to keep an eye on this three-year-old, and it's been raining, and we go outside after their nap. We let the child play in the water. Maybe they stomp in the puddle. If we would let them, they would sit in the puddle. And they would have a good time exploring the water and the experience of all of that. And then when it's all done, we would take them inside, give them a bath, put on clean clothes, and that would be the end of it. That's us. We have been given the power, the privilege to play in the not God zone, to expand and explore what might happen. And we are now stepping out of that possibility and only going to do the God choices, which is why 5D is so different. It's literally a different game. The old game allowed positive and negative choices. The new game allows positive choice.
I'm wondering if I might expand a little bit on that as I'm wanting to, and hopefully sharing with others the understanding of what you're sharing with us, that when I take a look at our connectivity, our connectedness as spirit beings, that immortal part of us, and I take a look at the current systems that are in play here on Earth for us as human beings, I take a look at the principles laid out, for example, in our U.S. Constitution about life and liberty and free will and all of those different things. And when I take a look at the connectivity by comparison to that aspect governed by that Constitution, that document, those words, I think that life and liberty and owning property and all of those elements of quote unquote a republic or a democracy, whichever you choose, are neither good nor bad, but from the spiritual perspective, they're irrelevant. They're irrelevant because we no longer think in those terms on that level. And I think that's what you're saying, right? Is that the duality of this world becomes irrelevant in the fifth dimension. It's not even part of it. The things that we do are just the things that we do, as if we were looking at the cosmos and we were watching supernovas explode and comets flying around and things hurtling and crashing into one another. That's just what the universe does. It's neither good nor bad. There's no judgment there.
That's right. That's right. That's well said. And that's another lovely example to help frame it.
Yeah. And yet there are people who claim to be religious and or spiritual, but boy, do they hold on to those concepts as if their lives depended upon it. And I go back to Paul's statement, be afraid of the one who can kill the soul, not the body. If there were truly an entity that could kill the soul, I believe that our souls are immortal and only we can do damage to our soul.
Well, you know, it's a very interesting concept. People don't realize that they are so wedded to our way of thinking, because if there is a zone, like you say, like the universe just is, there's no longer this experience of people needing to correct one another or needing to save one another, because people aren't choosing those things that would be harmful. So the whole vibration changes.
How did you discover, or how was the fifth dimension presented to you? How did that happen?
It came upon me gradually. And I was doing the work of the Merkaba meditation. And I taught that for almost 20 years all over the world. And in the meditations, over and over, I was getting more and more information. And I will say that I had the good fortune of teaching a class practically every weekend for almost 20 years. So I got to teach, you know, close to 15,000 people. And what happened in that process is I learned by their questions, because when they would ask questions, the information would flow through me. And I remember, I still say this today, you know, I'll give a session to someone, an Akashic Record session, and I'll say, could I have a copy of your recording? Because I just heard some stuff that even I didn't know. And so my initial understanding of the fifth dimension came through my meditations and through my group work with the students. And I began to realize that the information that was coming from other places wasn't entirely pure, because people were running it through their filters. And because the Merkaba itself, this is a fifth dimensional field and puts you in fifth dimension, regardless of whether you've earned it or deserve it or not, what happens is I was able to actually resource data sets that represented what that would look like and what that felt like. So it truly came through the work that I was doing at the time, the meditation work and the classroom work with the students.
With the things that you have come across, the things that you have learned and experienced, and the awareness that you have today that we're all sort of trying to work towards. And I tell you what, if I could, and I love using this word, if I could grok the fifth dimension, which maybe I'm pretty darn close to that because of my understanding, because I'm, be honest with you, kind of tired of this trauma, drama, dualistic world. This is just getting ridiculous. I'm only 59 and I'm sick and tired of this silliness, this craziness that is going on. But again, this is people's choices. This is what they want to do. If we were to create some kind of a scale of consciousness and awareness, awakeness, and again, you do have a book that focuses on this subject of the fifth dimension, waking up in 5D. Where would you place yourself? I mean, you know, I realize that for us to sort of tell others, well, I'm at this level and I'm way up here kind of thing. But if we could separate ego.
When you're at that level, you don't have ego. That's why I burst out laughing. Mm-hmm. Because I could tell you where I'm at, but to me, it's kind of funny because it doesn't matter to me. It's only mm-hmm. in third dimension that it matters.
Right.
And I think you are grokking the fifth dimension because of a fabulous example you gave of how it's a whole different vantage point. It's a whole different view of how things are. And you know, we talk about all the drama and trauma around us, but truly, I believe a lot of it is trumped up and put in front of us as if there is drama when there isn't. And I believe that we're not getting the true story of how people are interacting. Because I ride in cabs every day. I go, you know, I'm in various cities all over the world. You know, right now I'm in Washington, D.C. Last weekend I was in Austin. And I don't encounter prejudice. I don't encounter people with issues that we are being shown on the media. And so I don't believe what I'm seeing in the media, and I tend to discount that. It's kind of like when you have a kid in grade school. You know, as a mom raising four sons, my initial belief was that my kids didn't lie. Then when I realized that they did lie and that they weren't always telling the truth, then I began to take what they said with a grain of salt and look for the bigger picture. And I think that's what we're being called to do right now. Every one of us needs to look at what we're being told and then look what we are feeling and knowing in our own personal experience and reframe the so-called public view of what's really happening in the world. Because I think a lot of people are onto it, that we are being spoon-fed a bunch of garbage, and that as soon as we can, we're going to regurgitate and change it. So it's a very interesting concept to begin to say, you know what, I don't have an issue with what other people are doing. I don't have an issue with how they choose to live. I want to help them if they need help, and I want to leave them alone if they don't.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty cool. So in 5D, you know, there's a number of things that a person can do to help themselves to stay 5D. And I think that's important because as you become aware of the fact that we are being spoon-fed some garbage, we can consciously choose to step away from that and to step out of it. And there's five things that tap us into the mass consciousness. And then there's a whole lot of things we can do to help proactively go into 5D. So the five things that lock us down into 5D is our morning coffee, the morning Joe. I have to have my morning coffee, the morning news, the morning weather, any kind of thing that people are doing consciously, like the job, the daily job. Mm-hmm. I have to show up at work at this daily time. And then finally, big events like sports events, public debates, like that. And I'm not suggesting that people stop drinking coffee or stop going to work. What I am suggesting is that they decide that they are choosing it and that they want to do it as an individual act rather than I'm part of the masses that are falling in. And that requires deciding some days to change it up, some days to not go into work, to work from home. Mm-hmm. Some days to have your coffee at 11 instead of at 8, like that. And what happens is you stay in your power. And then to follow that along, this proactive choice to use to dismiss the have to from the vocabulary. So what that means is I don't have to go get the kids at 4 o'clock. I don't have to meet my husband for dinner. I don't have to get this report done. Instead, I'm getting this report done because it's due tomorrow and I want my boss to be happy. I like picking up my kids at 4 because they love it when they're not the last one. Like that. So the have to business pulls our power and puts it out in front of us somewhere that someone else can grab. Mm. And when we are more proactive with our language, we are actually claiming our power, and then everything else we do and say has more power. And we are less likely to be swayed by false beliefs and false systems. Because there is this quality, I will call it, of distrust that occurs when people read stuff or when they hear about it. And the percentage of distrust varies in individuals. And I believe it's directly proportional to how powerful they feel. If they are in their power, their ability to distrust the mass media news or whatever it is greater than those people who are pulled in and they are part of the machine or the matrix.
I need for you to take a look at something there. On your end, Maureen, I'm actually pausing here for just a moment. I'm hearing a lot of noise coming from your microphone.
Oh, that's because I was playing with my necklace. I'm sorry. I'm going to change out my headset. Hang on a second.
All right, go ahead, and then we'll continue on.
Okay. Okay. I think this headset's a little better anyway.
Oh, my goodness, you sound so good. You sound so good. All right, stand by. 3, 2, 1. Well, as you describe the fifth dimension, as you describe these processes that we can go through, first of all, one of the things that I tell people these days, especially with what's going on way over there, like where you are now, is look at it. If you choose, and that's the operative word right there. If you choose to look at it, look at it through the filter of cartoons, okay? That it is just a big old cartoon that you're watching. It's a bad cartoon, but it's still a cartoon. It's not Warner Brothers. It's not Hanna-Barbera. It's not Pixar and Disney. But it is still a cartoon. And go ahead and laugh. It's, you know, because there's nothing we can do about it. Honestly, there really is, or any of these other issues that are way away from us. There isn't anything we can do about it. So either stop watching, stop listening, or if you choose to do so, do it so that you don't get drawn in emotionally. And that happened to me in 2016. So you don't get drawn into it emotionally. Look at it as a cartoon. Put a laugh track behind it because, quite honestly, it is hilarious. It's hilarious that people are choosing to play this little game and trying to make it a serious thing for everybody else. They're trying to convince me this is important. This could be the defining moment in our democracy. And it's like, really? Are you serious? I don't think so, because in 200 years or even 2,000 years, I will venture, I don't know this for a fact, there has never been a civilization, according to some historical records, that has ever made it beyond 400 years, roughly. Some way along the way, after 400 years, they do something that wipes them out, that dismantles that system. So we're more than halfway through our longevity. And something else will come along to replace it. Nothing is permanent. I don't care how hard you... And that's the other key. The only constant in the universe, and all you have to do is look at the universe to acknowledge this fact, the only constant is change. The universe is constantly moving. I may have shared this with you before. I was a seven-year-old sitting in mass, sitting in the pew, trying to blink as fast as I could twice to have two identical blinks, okay? Two identical blinks. And it was about 5 to 10 minutes later, just before I drove myself nuts, that I realized that my efforts were futile because of the fact that everything on the subatomic level and on the cosmic level is in motion. And that there is absolutely no way, no matter how fast I could blink, that I would have two identical blinks. And so I let that go. So change happens. And things come and they go. And, you know, from birth comes death, comes birth, comes death, comes birth, and it keeps going. Right. That's and there's no judgment. That's neither good nor bad. That's just the process.
Well, you know, and that really nails it for me. The part that I am astounded by is the people who profess to be very spiritual, people who profess to be, for example, Buddhists, and then post some kind of hate message about some politician. Mm. And I look at that and I think, isn't that counter to what you practice? How can you be in practice as a unconditional loving person and then post something? And it's because they have separated themselves from their belief. And they've allowed themselves, as you have defined, to get pulled into drama that they pretend to care about, but they really don't care about it. Because if they did, they'd do something about it. They're just using their words to kind of fuel the drama.
Mm-hmm.
I'm disappointed by that because I feel that it is my job to be peace loving and peaceful, and I choose words that help me stay that way. And that's kind of where I was going before when I was saying, you know, there's words you can proactively use. For example, you can use, instead of, you know, words like weird or strange or things like that, when something happens that makes no sense to you, to use, I wonder what's going on or what is going on. And because we're all willing to meditate, let's say, those of us who are following what your guests and your people, our people,
mm-hmm.
We're going to find people that when we ask the question, what's going on, or I wonder, we're actually going to get answers that we weren't expecting, surprising answers that give us knowledge that we weren't expecting. For example, when I was able to tell my son what was wrong with our van when we were driving down the road and it started making a funny noise, and I said, I wonder what's going on with the van, and then out of my mouth, you know, something about the chain belt, I was astounded, and I burst out laughing because I thought it was so funny. How could I, you know, a simpleton when it comes to cars, know that? And in meditation, I asked, how is it possible that I knew that answer, and yet I don't know other stuff? And I was told, you asked the what question. And then I began to examine our interview questions, who, what, why, when, where, and how, all seek to collect information so we can solve a problem. That's very masculine, and I don't mean it like in a biased way, but I mean it is the male way, or the male way to see a problem and solve it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the female way to see a problem and nurture it, and that's our way. That's, you know, like that's how we're kind of our makeup.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean that we're always doing it because we're all supposed to be balanced, male, female. So here I am with this situation of being told that all I had to do was ask the what question. So I began teaching that all you needed to do was ask what's going on. And I had already had an experience where stuff was disappearing in third dimension and then reappearing sometime later. And whenever I asked where it was, I was always told, well, it's in a higher dimension. Now, when I began to examine, wait a minute, there's only one question that's completely open-ended and unbiased and non-prejudiced and non-preferential, and that's the what question. Who, when, where, or why are all asking so I can go solve it? If I know who ate the cookies, I can go fuss at them. How come you ate all the cookies and didn't share? When were the cookies eaten? Well, if they were eaten at 6 o'clock, probably not going to have dinner at 6:30. So you start looking at the kind of question you're asking. And so one of the things that I began teaching then was this what question will give you answers. So when something disappeared after I had figured this out, again, through meditation and experience, and I asked, what's going on, instead of where did my stuff go, I was told, Maureen, you were in a higher dimension when you put it down. So then I started asking people, are you having this experience? And they were all having the same experience. One powerful teacher, who was also teaching the Merkaba years ago, when I said to her, does this ever happen to you? She said, oh my gosh, I came home one day with, it was late, we'd had a glass of wine, and I was, you know, thinking about other things, and I took my beautiful emerald ring off and threw it in the top drawer because I didn't feel like putting it away. Next day when I went to put it away, it was gone. I looked for 2 months for that ring in that drawer, never found it. I finally said to myself, okay, fine, it's gone, and let it go. Next time I opened the drawer, it was right there on top. Because in 3D, we're full of polarity. I'm anxious, I'm concerned, I'm I'm in that energy. In 5D, we're curious, we're open, we're receptive, we're non-judgmental. And then she could see it. So in 3D, we can participate in the reality. In 5D, we can participate in 5 and 3. So we're playing in the 3D realm, but we're also participating at 5D. And when we drop back into 3D and we don't have that capacity, we can't see it. So I would say to you, the dimensions are nested like Russian dolls. Mm. 3D doesn't see 5D, but 5D sees 3D.
Mm. Well, my wife and I had an experience like that just recently, and it was bizarre. My wife was looking for a particular medication that she needed to take. And, I mean, her health wasn't in jeopardy. I mean, if we waited another 15, 20 minutes, it wasn't critical or anything like that. And she says, I can't find these things. I just got this prescription today. And so she says, I need your help looking for this through the 2 bags that she carries with her. I says, well, first of all, when was the last time you took one? She says, just a little while after we got home from work. So that would have been around 5:30, 6 o'clock. This was at 7 or 8, 9 o'clock at night. I said, okay. So I start rummaging through her bags and her purse and so forth. Nothing. I couldn't find them anywhere. She told me it's one of those big bottles. And okay, so I know what I'm looking for. And she's searching and we're looking all over the house and da-da-da-da-da-da. Finally, I grab a flashlight and I go back to a bag that I was looking at. And I know what they feel like. I mean, being born and raised legally blind, I very rarely used my sight to find stuff. I could get dressed in the dark and know what colors I was putting on because I could kind of feel the vibration, if you will. Mm. So I'm feeling around in the bags with my hands. I know what this bottle feels like. I know what I'm looking for, and I couldn't find it. And so about a half hour goes by, and I grab that flashlight after we've been searching the house, the bathroom, the kitchen, the living room, blah, 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 blah. And I flashed the light into the bag. Bam! There it was. And I'm going, wait a minute. I almost dumped the thing on the floor to search through it. Where the heck was it? You know, I mean, it's like, I know what those bottles feels like. She had 2 sitting on the table there. I knew what they looked like, and I was even looking in there even with the diminished light, and I actually did turn an overhead light on. How is it that it could just suddenly show up? We even had a cat who had, his name was Merlin, and we would want to kind of take an account of the cats. Now, they were all indoor cats, so they never went outside. So it wasn't like he escaped from the house, but we couldn't find him. We looked under and in and over and through and around everything in the house, and we couldn't find him. And all of a sudden, he comes walking out from the hallway, kind of looking a little disheveled, going, were you looking for me? What's going on? What's happening? And of course, the name Merlin was very appropriate because the day of his passing, his body went limp, and my wife has a stethoscope for her work, and she checks, and his heart had stopped. He was gone, And of course, she was just, he was her pride and joy. I mean, she just loved him like you would not believe. And she just broke down. And he came back to life. And stayed with her for another hour or so. And then finally, he passed. And at that point, I said to her, I says, he just performed his last disappearing act by coming back, by coming back.
Wow.
She was so distraught, and he knew it, that he came back just to let her know it was okay. Now, she was still upset, but nonetheless. And so one of the things that I do now with our animals when they pass, especially the cats, is we place make a little altar on the dining room table and put a towel down or what have you. Then we put the body in the towel in the box, and we leave it there for the day and let the cats come and pay. We have five.
Yeah.
Let them pay their respects. And they did.
Right.
We didn't do that as much for my dog who passed a year ago, October, last year. But then again, the cats were already coming around as we were going through the process of letting her go.
Mm-hmm.
One of them even came over and nuzzled with her. The other one laid next to her. And of course, our dog Angus, he came over and he was sniffing her. And again, everybody knew what was going on. We find that's very important to have people have these experiences collectively, together. Don't hide them from family, friends, or your animals, for that matter. They know what's going on.
So I am totally in sync with you about how we say goodbye to our pets and how we handle that and how we let the other pets in on it.
But we need to do
that
with
very cool.
But we need to do that with humans too.
Yeah,
we really do.
We used to do that.
Yes.
But I want to touch back to that business of the lost medicine.
Yes.
And say at some point when you got the flashlight, there was a calmness that must have come over you, so that you were able to easily slide into that peaceful zone of 5D.
I guess so.
That allowed you to see it. And that's what I'm saying. Anytime somebody has something disappear, and that storyline you gave was perfect, you can do one of two things. You can say to yourself, okay, I can't find it. I need help. I'd like to find it. Thank you very much. And you can also just let it go and relax.
Yeah.
And then it'll turn up.
One of the
things, again, that zone of 3D is that zone of polarity. And the zone of 5D is the zone of non-judgment and, you know, tolerance and acceptance.
Well, you know the old saying about looking for something and then you find it, and they always say it's always in the last place you look? So I joke with people and I say, yeah, I found it in the purse, but I kept looking for it because I didn't want it to be in the last place I looked. Just to put a little humor on it. We're talking with Maureen St. Germain, and we're talking about 5D. Which is very cool. I know that they've come up with 3D television and 3D movies, which do me absolutely do me no good whatsoever because I only have one good eye. And I've even talked with people when I tell them I only have one good eye, and so the depth perception isn't as good as maybe yours might be. And they say, well, when you're driving, how do you know when a car is getting closer? I said, well, you know, what's really funny about that is, you know how it says in some of these rear view mirrors, side view mirrors, it says that objects may appear larger or smaller or what have you? When a vehicle in front of me starts to get larger, that's telling me it's getting closer. I mean, it doesn't take a brain surgeon or a rocket scientist to figure that out.
Oh, that's so funny.
You know?
That's so funny.
If it's getting bigger, it's getting closer. I better slow down. And sometimes we don't realize that, right? Whether it's literally something that's getting closer and it's getting bigger, or some of the things that we ask for. I don't know about you. I'm a believer in the general concept of the law of attraction, but also with the proviso that it is for my highest good and for the highest good of all. For example, I love Corvettes. I think they're the neatest looking cars, and I would love to have one, but I don't know that I want to drive one because I love driving up high so I can see what's going on. You know, when you're driving in a Corvette, you're darn near on the ground. And how in the world can you see?
Yeah, it's true. Or maybe you don't want the maintenance cost or whatever the maintenance else goes with that particular vehicle.
But what about that in terms of our desires, our putting stuff out, saying, I want this, I want that. You know, I've put out my desires, my dream for this radio program to take it on the road. I'd love to get an RV and travel the country, if not the world, and interview people who are making a difference in their lives and the lives of their family, their community, and so forth. I sit here going, okay, universe, is that something that's in my highest good? Is that something that's part of my life's purpose? You know, and I don't know for certain. All I know is it sounds like a neat idea, but hey, maybe the universe has other plans. Maybe I won't be doing it in an RV. Maybe I don't know how I'll be doing it other than the way we do it right now.
Well, I really like your idea, and I think that you will do it. It feels to me like you will. But I also think it's going to happen when your wife is ready to give up her day 9 to 5 or whatever it is that she does, her gig, because she's going to want to go with you and you're going to want her to come.
Oh, sure.
And
absolutely.
You know, maybe you start out by doing it 2 weeks a year and then you do it for a month a year like that, and you'll work into it. There's something about what you said, though, that I have a very strong opinion about, and that is I believe our desires are part of our mission, and that when we get an idea and a desire, very often it is related to our mission and the creative part of fulfilling our mission. And certainly if you took your show on the road, you'd reach people both as audience and as people you might interview in a different way than you are doing now. So there might be some merit there. and I do know that people have desires that don't serve them, certainly. But I am also of the mind that the universe gives us desires that we hone in on and are able to speak about and say, gosh, that would be really amazing if I could do that, so that we will fulfill our desires and that they kind of help lead us into where we're going.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Well, one of my desires in regards to, for example, these podcasts is, of course, to have as many people listen as much as possible. So here we are at the time of our conversation, my friend, and I jump over to the SoundCloud website where I post all of my podcasts, and I'm looking at the statistics, and I check them periodically, you know, and, you know, I've been posting since January of 2018.
Okay.
And since September of 2018, I have been posting 3 interviews a week. And I am now looking at the stats here almost 2 years, a year and what is this, 10 months. And I have just reached 10,000 listens. 10K.
That's fantastic.
Unbelievable. I'm
in
looking,
2 years. That's fabulous.
In less than 2 years, I've made it to 10,000. Great. I love milestones. I love those. You know, I've often talked about those kinds of things.
In 5D, you throw out that word unbelievable and you change it to a proactive word. Like, I am so jazzed. I am thrilled.
Yeah.
Not unbelievable, but it's so fantastic. What an up, you know.
Now you raise,
must be doing something right.
Right. You raise a very interesting point I want to dive into.
Okay.
Not just the power of words, and I agree with you. Yes, it is quite believable, and it is astounding. I'm in awe. I'm grateful, very grateful for those who have brought that number to 10K. But there's another aspect to the power of words, and I want to talk about the 5D aspect here, because I'm discussing the concepts of success and failure in many of the programs with my guests, And of course, I bring up the example of Edison and his invention of the light bulb and the query by an observer saying, well, how many times did you fail? I mean, look at all the stuff in your lab here. He says, well, I never failed. I just found 990 ways it didn't work. So it got me to thinking, maybe we need to remove from our vocabulary, this has nothing to do with PC, okay? Remove from our vocabulary those words of dualism. There is no success. There is no failure. There is only learning. There is only evolving. There is only growing. And to me, that's what the light bulb that Edison developed was an evolutionary process that went through 990 transformations. So,
and there's a whole chapter in my book about this and a list of words that are full of dualism and their counterpoints. Yeah, absolutely true. And I say they're counterpoints only to say they're uplifting, you know, a reference point. So instead of saying, I made a mistake, it's like I have another opportunity to fix it, you know.
Yeah.
Another opportunity to learn, even not even fix it, because fix it implied that there was a problem.
That it was broken. Well, it wasn't broken. It just didn't, it wasn't working. So, for example, what was it? There was just something recently that happened it was the young man, and this was like 5 or 6 years ago. I found on the internet, you know, the Dutch young man who has developed this new method of collecting the plastics out in the ocean.
Mm-hmm. I remember there's a number of people out there doing that.
Right.
Yeah.
But this fellow was from Denmark, and they did a 60 Minutes piece on him last year. And boy, was he getting the criticism from people and how he was hustling people for money, and it was just a sham and everything. And I remember seeing his initial designs 5 years ago online and looking at the way this device would work. And I thought, well, this is an interesting concept. I'm rooting for this fella to make this happen, you know, not only for his own personal process, but also in terms of helping to clean up the oceans. And it turns out there was just a story yesterday of this young man who, having taken his devices out on the ocean several times and not succeeding, if you will, if I may use that word, the device did not work the way he said it was going to. There was a story just yesterday, as of this conversation, where it was working.
Nice.
It was working. And that there are several other devices around the world that are beginning the process of cleaning up the plastics in the ocean.
Right, right. I belong to one of the organizations called Oceans Four Oceans, numeral four and then the word oceans. And you're right, there's lots of different ways that they're doing it, but there is a guy, and I'm thinking it's probably this guy you were talking about,
and
who developed a device where it just kind of
persistent,
yeah,
exactly. It scoops them up in a big net, so to speak, all the way down to microscopic particles, which is wonderful. But the thing is that he was persistent. He did not allow the dualistic negativity, the naysayers, to stop him. He knew that what he was doing was way more important than any accolades or criticisms that he might get. And he got the support that he needed, and now it's working. And I remember one aspect of it, of course, you know, a lot of people would say, well, all right, so you've collected it. Now what are you going to do with it? And he'd even thought about that, too. He says, well, we're going to take that, and this was then. I don't know if it's the same now. We're going to take it, and we're going to grind it up, and we're going to turn it into insulation and put it in homes. So you're going to be able to turn it into a material that's going to help to keep somebody cool in the summer and warm in the winter. So we're going to be able to use it for something other than polluting our oceans and streams and lakes and rivers and so forth. But the message to me, again, is that we have to be persistent, right? We have to continue to move forward. And from the fifth dimensional perspective, it sounds to me like what we have to do is ignore. And this is the hard part.
This is funny. In 5D, there is no have to. So that's the
choose
thing.
Choose to. All right. Choose. How about I change that to choose to?
Yeah, right. In 5D, we're so loving that we naturally gravitate towards that which is going to produce opportunities, openness, and so on.
So we choose to not listen to both the naysayers, but also those who are giving us accolades. We don't do these things. If we're in service in the fifth dimension, if we're just in service to be of service, that's what we want to do, right?
Well, I think you make a good point, but I would qualify it and say we listen to both the accolades and the critics and learn what we can from both.
Ah, okay. All right.
Again, treating it as an opportunity to grow and to understand.
Very good. Okay. Because if you think about it, everything that happens in our lives, and I'm asking this more as a question, both what's spoken as well as the events that happen and so forth, are all part of that process, aren't they?
Yeah, I think so. I think everything that happens to us is an opportunity for us to look upon ourselves and our circumstance and choose to take what's useful and dismiss the rest and not worry about it.
So we don't want to ignore. We don't want to ignore.
No, I don't think we do want to ignore it. For example, if you have a little potted garden on your balcony and there's a weed growing in it, you pull the weed out. You don't ignore it because it'll choke out your pretty flowers. But you don't get mad that there's a weed. You just pull it out and you say, okay, whatever. I sometimes tell people, you know, think about changing a baby's diaper. You don't get mad because the baby has a dirty diaper again. You just say, well, that's just, it comes with the territory. At some point they'll learn how to use the toilet. Right now they're babies and I love holding them, and changing them is part of that process. And so, no, I don't know anybody who would get mad because the baby had a soiled diaper again. You just look at it, okay, great, everything's working.
Exactly. Everything's working. It's healthy.
Exactly.
It's functioning under the parameters of the manufacturer, so to speak.
That's well said.
That, you know. Now, the other aspect, too, and this was a phrase that was said to me in one of these personal growth programs, and I tell you what, it's stuck with me ever since, and maybe this will help folks. It's not necessarily meant to make anybody feel bad or good, but give you a perspective. When we go into these personal growth programs, and when I went into my first one, which was LifeSpring back in 1980, was it 80 or 81? Anyway, and we're all sitting around, I think it was evening two or maybe evening three, because we did three nights and then the weekend. And of course, there was a lot of angst. There was a lot of frustration. It's like, man, I really don't want to be here. I would really rather be doing something else. You know what? When we go on break, I'm not coming back. So the facilitator, basically, obviously aware because this was a natural process and of the weekend. Basically, I know there are a lot of you who really, you know, you're feeling kind of frustrated and you really wish you weren't here. But I have something I want to share with you. And that is that if you didn't want to be here, you wouldn't be. So obviously you must want to be here or you would be somewhere else. So since you're here, why don't you just go ahead and participate in what we're doing? Now, at first, it raises a great deal of frustration. And it's like, well, I don't want to be here. And then, you know, you start pondering it a little bit, realizing, oh, yeah. I guess I do. and then most all of them, 99.9% of them, they jump right in and, all right, I'm here. And who knows, maybe I'll learn something about myself. Maybe I'll expand my consciousness and awareness of who and what I really am and so on and so forth.
Well, you know, that brings home a really good point that I try to tell people all the time. And that is, do not do something out of obligation or pressure. Do something because you want to. And if you don't want to do it, get out. And if you do want to do it, find a way to love it. And because it does happen, you know, people get in relationship, for example, and then they decide they don't want to leave because it's convenient. They like the person enough. They want to stay, but it's, you know, there's some drama going on or something. And so they have to decide to be in enthusiasm, to be in an enthusiastic place, so that they can put their energy into it. Because if you're only there and you're not participating, you've given up a bunch of your energy. Again, it goes back to who's in charge here? Who are you reporting to?
Yeah. Yeah. Before we wrap up our wonderful conversation here, and we're going to obviously get together again and again and again on this program. I love chatting with you. You've got, I love this concept of 3D, 5D, probably more so because I get it. I understand
it.
Yeah. But because if I get it, then so can other people. And it's a wonderful thing when it's a simple concept that's so understandable, not necessarily applicable from the standpoint that it's easy to apply, because it takes practice and practice and practice in order to start living in that 5D point of view and perspective. Intuition, still small voice, the guidance from, I don't want to say above, it's funny, I remember once someone saying that, when you talk about the moon and the moon is up there, that is not accurate. It's out there, but it is not up there, because we don't know which way is up. I mean, from the perspective of Earth, certainly down would be the ground and up would be not the ground. But in terms of the solar system and the universe, there is no up or down. So in terms of our still small voice and listening to and following along that, where does, is that what you were referring to earlier in terms of the ideas, the desires that come into our minds and hearts? Is that where that comes from, as well as the guidance that we get throughout the day sometimes? You need to turn left up here instead of right. You need to stop for 5 seconds because otherwise something might happen that you really don't want in your life, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
I think that still small voice is the beginning of our connection to our divine self. And our divine self is our fifth dimensional self. And I believe that what we're really doing is turning our 3D selves into our fifth dimensional selves, which is the ascended master self, or the 5D human, which is the person who has a place in their connection with the divine. But the still small voice is a very important part of that. And what I like to do is tell people how they can turn the volume up on that so that they have 100% accuracy. And there's a whole way to do that. And it's three easy steps on how to turn up that volume. And you work on it for 45 days. It's in all my books, the 5D book, the Akashic Records book, and all the other books. And it's so important that it's more important than anything, any other teacher, anything, because once you've got that volume turned up and you can always know, not trust, but know. And what's the difference between trust and know? Trust is that I'm going to show up. Knowing is the sun is going to come up. So you know, you move from a place of trust to knowing what information you're getting is 100% accurate. Because what happens to people is they start to develop their intuition, and then their ego jumps in and says, no, 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 we've never done it that way before. We can't do it that way. And then you step into something and you realize, oh man, I should have been listening to my guidance. And the reason we don't is because the ego is strong, and the ego has helped us get where we are. The ego got us into that class or listening to this show. And so we think that the ego must be right. And the truth of the matter is, our ego was developed to keep us safe and happy. And when we go through a 6-week practice, which is what this protocol requires, what happens is the ego is like in the background watching unimportant questions. And in a playful way, it begins to see that the higher self is always right. Then there's no competition. Then you have a history of your higher self information giving you the deal, the mm-hmm. real deal. Mm-hmm. And what happens is then there's a happy collaboration. And I tell people, even when you have a really good higher self connection, if you don't follow it 100% of the time, you are not in a place of knowing. You're only in a place of trust, because you sometimes don't trust it. Sometimes you choose otherwise. When you're in a place of knowing, there is no question. You always move forward with what your guidance is. And the cool thing about this is the ego wants what the higher self delivers. And when you have a practice period where you're asking about stuff you don't care about, what happens is you actually get what you really want, even if it's counterintuitive. And that practice over time shows the ego that your higher self is your new best friend. Mm. And so it's a collaboration. And I like to tell people, you know what, do your ego stuff first. You're going to buy a car? Do all the research, check consumer reports, check with your friends, check online, drive the cars. You're down to your bottom two. It's either this car or that car. Ask your higher self, because your higher self knows what you're going to be happiest with in the long term. And you've done your due diligence, so the ego is settled and satisfied. Mm. It's very cool. And then when something really important happens and you need to know for sure, mm-hmm. you don't have to trust your higher self, because you know your higher self will know.
Yeah. And it, and you're so synced that it's just there.
And exactly.
I say
synced is a perfect word.
Oh, yeah. I must have been in sync a year ago, November, because in being involved in a non-injury accident, the vehicle I was driving, a Volvo, was totaled. And the rental car that we got was a Ford F-150, a 2018. And we were driving that for a month. And we're really kind of enjoying it. And we'd been talking for years about getting a truck. So everything was kind of moving forward, and we went to the dealership out in Ventura, actually Enterprise, because they had a special arrangement with our credit union. And guess what? We drove off the lot with a 2014 Ford F-150.
Nice.
And I knew, and I didn't feel badly about this, but I just had the awareness, this is going to be a little more expensive to operate. I mean, the gas is going to cost a little more because it's a bigger tank, and the monthly payments are going to be a little more because it's a little more expensive, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Although we did get a fantastic deal, I have to tell you. But those things didn't bother me. And I have to tell you, to this day, and it's been almost a year, I have absolutely thrilled. I am thrilled. I love driving that thing, you know, because I feel safer in it, even though I felt very safe in the Volvo. By the way, they live up to their safety record, let me tell you. But I feel safer in it because I'm up higher and I can see things better. Number two is it gives us the opportunity, if we ever have to bug out again due to wildfires in our area, we're set to go. We're also then going to be able to get that travel trailer. I kind of mentioned, alluded to something like that at the beginning in the program. So there are, it's as if the universe is saying, yes, you're going to go down this road that you're talking about. And it may not be as fast as your wife wants to do it, because she's really impatient. She's ready to move. She's ready to roll. But it's like the universe saying, hey, it's all right. Just take it slow. You will get there. You've got plenty of time. And so just relax and enjoy the journey. And I think that maybe that's the biggest message that maybe you and I can pass on to our listeners is, no matter what's going on, try to enjoy the journey. Try to look around and smell the flowers and see the trees and the birds and the other animals and just feel where you are. That's going to make all the difference in the world, I think, right?
Right. I think it's totally cool. And what a great story. And the way you told it this time is very profound, because the universe told you that's the truck for you, and everything else fell by the wayside. Not that you aren't a careful person, not that you aren't cautious with your budget or your available funds, but that you knew the universe was supporting you in it, and it didn't matter.
Exactly.
How cool is that?
Before we go, I there is one other thing I want to touch on, because I was really intrigued by this, and I would really love for you to give us an understanding of this. You have a section on your website in regards to a meditation, a very specific type of meditation, and I really want to understand this, and that is the divine government meditation. First of all, talk to us about what is meant by a divine government.
That would be the equivalent of the 5D government. And it's very cool that you brought this up, because I do have several free meditations on my website all the time. But that is the one I have had up for a couple of years. And I put it up, of course, when a lot of the drama around before the presidential election started.
Mm-hmm.
And the meditation is a guided meditation. It takes about 11 minutes to do. And it basically creates a matrix that says your boss, your spouse, anyone who's upline from you, your county commissioner, the policeman, the mayor, the governor, all the way up to the head of your state, of your country, is connected to their divine self. And that they, through this connection, they are influenced proactively to make decisions that are in the highest and best good of the people they serve. That's the short version. Isn't that cool?
I would absolutely. Oh, absolutely. And I would encourage people to go to your website, which is, of course, MaureenSaintGermain.com. To find out more about, of course, Maureen, about the work that she is doing, and about the work that you can participate in, and also connect with her as well. We encourage you to do that. And we also encourage our listeners to listen to the entire podcast of this particular interview. I think that you're going to really enjoy what we have spent the last hour talking about. I think it's going to be very insightful for you, and I certainly hope that you all are able to grok the concept of 5D. I'm probably more excited about getting that and understanding it than I was. And I was pretty darn excited about Jacques Fresco's concept of the futuristic civilizations and the fact that it's going to be a whole new way of thinking and doing things, which I think would be part along the way of the 5D concept as well. I encourage you folks to go to MaureenSaintGermain.com. Maureen, before we wrap up the program, I do want to ask you three questions that I probably asked you before. And hey, sometimes the answers change. We never know. But I want to ask you those that just the same. And also, obviously, always, should you be in the Santa Barbara area, we would love to have you in studio to continue this conversation. However, we will always continue it regardless on Skype or whatever other method of communication we use and share it with the rest of the world.
Okay.
The first of the questions is, who is Maureen Saint Germain?
Maureen Saint Germain is a mystic on a mission.
What is
my mission is to help people do the best they can do and be the best they can be.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
It is my hope that I inspire people to decide to be different than they were in order to be better than they were.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
I think I've already named it. My purpose is to help people be the best they can be. And I am sharing what I am learning, trying to be the best that I can be. And to that end, I will share with you one of the most profound things that I learned in the process of becoming me. And that is a simple prayer of, I am asking for a day of heaven on earth for me and everyone I come in contact with, which absolutely guarantees a 5D day.
I like it. I like guarantees. I like guarantees. Maureen Saint Germain, again, thank you so much for joining us here on the program. It's always a pleasure, and we will have you back again in the maybe at the turn of the by the way, I have coined a new phrase for the coming year. And we're going to celebrate it from the standpoint of calling it 2020, the year of perfect vision.
Nice. I like it.
So we will join you then, and we will join you listening. Thank you for listening, and certainly tune in to the entire interview as we have conducted it here. And until the next Tell Me Your Story with New Paradigms for a New World, I'm Richard Dugan. Love, Talal.